if you're going to spend 90% of the time doing the thing and 10% of the time enjoying the outcome, then it truly makes more sense to enjoy doing the thing 90% of the time. That was the key learning.
Hey, how are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is James Welton. You might remember him as a teenage prodigy who hacked the Apple iPod Nano and achieved global superstardom at the time, and then went on to set up Coder Dojo, which became one of the biggest not-for-profit coding enterprises in the entire world. We find out about his meteoric rise and what happened next. This is my chat with James Welton. Ever find yourself jumping from task to task? Sudden eureka moments at the weirdest hours, and you forget little details? Does that sound familiar? That might be ADHD, and ADHD Now are here to help. Their experienced clinical professionals conduct video consultations at your schedule and help you manage and understand these symptoms, turning them into your unique assets. Visit adhdnow.ie/fox and use the code FOX10 at checkout for 10% discount on your initial consultation and full assessment. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at iconic offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June, and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. I'm building much more than a podcast with the Entrepreneur Experiment, and have a very clear vision of what I'm trying to achieve. One of those goals was to get involved in funding Irish businesses, and I've just achieved that goal. I've joined the Quintus Capital team as a special advisor to the EIIS Innovation Fund. I spent the last couple of years getting to know the team, learning about the industry, and the time has come to join forces. The EIIS Innovation Fund has invested in several of the podcast guests you know and love already, such as Matthew and Katie from Squid and Peggy Crowley of Brown Wellbeing, which has made the decision to join the fund a really, really simple one. EIIS Tax Relief provides significant tax refunds to investors who back Irish SMEs. However, the main issue with EIS is finding the right companies to invest in. This is where the EIS Innovation Fund comes in. It has an experienced management team to allocate your capital. They're now raising capital for November and December to deploy in 2024. If you are interested in becoming an investor, please visit EIIS.fund, so EIIS.fund, or download a copy of the online brochure in the show notes. James, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much.
It's a genuine pleasure to have you on. You're someone whose journey I was very familiar with. You were a breakout star. This is how I am maturing as a podcaster. I actually did some research for this episode, right? Usually
it's
I'm like...
It's all lies and slander.
Right, here we go, right? Let's just go at it. I actually did some research because I remember your story, like 2012, breakout star. What happened in 2012? Because like on like your list of achievements, it's like bam, 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 bam. What happened in 2012?
And then, like the big gap after. Yeah.
We'll get to that. Back.
It was a bit of a... like a wild journey because I suppose it was 18 co-founding Coder Dojo, and it all happened kind of very quickly. We're definitely a case of like the right thing at the right time. I had grown up like self-teaching how to code and not having anywhere to learn. I think the zeitgeist of like programming and tech was kind of was on the way up. You had the social network, hearing about like I guess like all these acquisitions, it's all very exciting. Social media is becoming like more prominent. I think there was a case of just once we started running these free programming clubs, people were really into it. They wanted to start them. All of a sudden it started becoming more accessible. I think anyone who knew me in school is like, well, if that idiot Welton can program, like surely I can. So it just kind of skyrocketed, and then going to different countries, getting like industry partners involved. So
it was wild because I remember it. Like yesterday, you were everywhere.
like it was just this explosive, like Corderojo, James Walton, like what was it like to be part of that? I guess, first of all, just tell me how did it even start? Like, how did you get the idea for that?
Yeah, it was like very accidental. Like I had started like programming at a young age, like making websites when I was like 9 or something. Not that I was like particularly intelligent or anything, but I enjoyed like making animations on the computer, wanted to show them to friends. So I learned how to make websites to put them up, bought a book on HTML to do it, and just enjoyed like messing around with computers, building different things, exploring like hacking and building like web apps and games. And I think in like 6th year, I won this like award for like best designed web page or something in this secondary school competition. And around that time, I'd like found an exploit for a version of the iPod Nano that came out. Now, it wasn't like a particularly impressive like exploit. Like I figured out how to get it to load a configuration file in a way it wasn't supposed to. And like,
I remember this now. Yeah. The fact that you said that has popped back into my head. What did it do?
Well, it was basically like you could access some configuration files on the device, but when you would like edit them, the device would just like compare it to a previous valid version of the file it had, and then just like ignore the change that you did. So I figured out if you got the device to like reset at the right moment after writing that file, it would be forced to load up with the new modified version. And then you could like remove icons, try and enable features. But I think the hype was like, it was like the first exploit for this device.
And also, Apple always seemed to be unhackable, right?
Where they were, I mean, like there was like the, I think around then there was always like there was the iPhone jailbreaking community. There was, there's a lot of people who are interested in that space.
I did a lot of that back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, the custom themes.
I earned a lot of money. I probably earned more money from that than I have in the rest of my career. That was just so lucrative back then.
It was, it was pretty mad because even, I'm trying to remember if like the, how long the App Store had been out for then. But yeah, it was another part of the hype. People were like, oh, Schoolboy hacks Apple. And I was like, it's not really.
Because you did go pretty viral like at that time.
Well, I put it up online and like, there was definitely, what was nice was there was people in, I guess, the iPhone hacking and jailbreaking community who were like super accomplished, like way, way more skilled than me, who I felt were doing real things, but they reached out. They're like, oh yeah, it'll probably go like this. It'll be a bit of hype. Like, and then people in my school found out that I did this thing. And again, they were like, one of my accomplishments was falling asleep in a 4th year English class and waking up in the 5th year's English class, which I think the teacher, he was right to do it to me. Fortunately, he didn't save me. But they were like, well, you know, if James can program, why can't we? And people started asking me. So I started teaching them twice a week after school and like how to build websites, how to make games, try and keep it like fun, a bit different from the classroom environment where we worked on stuff that people were interested in. Because I guess for me, like programming and building things was so important. And like, whereas a lot of people had maybe like their thing was being academic or being sporty and derived a lot of identity from that, like tech and programming and building things was my sense of identity. So yeah, people from other schools started wanting to come to my school when they heard about it, and then met Bill, and we were like, well, let's try do one of these clubs outside of school.
Who's Bill?
So Bill Liao, he is my co-founder in Corderojo. He's, I guess, what age is Bill now? He's a bit older than me, but I met him at the...
It's a nice way of answering it. Bill is like, don't say it, James.
Yeah.
Don't a bit older than me will do.
he is more experienced and wise than me.
There you go. But nicely sidestepped.
We met at the Dublin Web Summit. Someone introduced me because I thought that I was like all Cork people, I thought I was going to stay in Cork for the rest of my life.
Okay. You guys do love that place.
That we do, like boomerangs. one day we'll come back. But they were like, well, you should meet this guy. He's based down there. And like... that whole world of, I think like only in 6 years did like the idea of like maybe working in tech or programming or entrepreneurship become like more of a reality or fixture. Like I'd managed to blag a ticket. I think it was the break around October in 6th year. Someone had won a ticket to the Web Summit. They couldn't go. So on Twitter, I offered to like redesign her website, Margaret, if I could get her ticket, and she very kindly like gave me this ticket that she won.
Good trade.
So yeah, I know I really lucked out. yeah, at that event, like met a bunch of people, met like Connor Murphy for the first time.
2011, 2012, like the Web Summit back then was special.
Yeah.
That was very early doors, right?
It was very, I think.
Was that
like
even in the RDS
second
yet?
Second or third. No, it was at the Chartered Accountants House.
Unreal. Yeah. And so that was probably a very small group, was it?
It was, let me try and think. How many people were at it? Maybe, I can't remember.
100, a couple hundred maybe?
Yeah, I would say.
Compared to what people associated with now is like 10,000.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I would say, I want to say it's somewhere between 100 to 400, but there's probably an official PR line that
we'll steer clear of all of that. we're Switzerland when it comes to that. We'll go neither one
I benefited personally amazingly off it.
I've had, like I always use that Father Ted line, I've had my fun and that's all that matters. That's the lie we take on this pod, right?
But I met someone introduced me to Bill, and then I was telling him about it. He said, well, you know, I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen after I finish secondary school. People want to keep going. And he said, well, yeah, you should just like run it outside school. We had talked about keeping it free. I never thought that people would give us space for free, that people would volunteer. I think like I had this very intimate relationship with programming where like I loved it. It was important to me. But, like I didn't see this whole shortage of programmers or basically the skills shortage in the tech industry, whereas Bill did. So he was like the perfect co-founder. And then, we ran that first session. People started coming down from Dublin to attend it and just kind of rolled with it from there. So it was total fluke.
Why make it like a social enterprise? Why make it? Did you ever think, oh, this could be a big business?
I think I only realized that too late, unfortunately. No.
Wait, you can make profit at this?
Yeah, retrospective.
God damn it, Bill.
We've hit our 10th anniversary. We're going to retrospectively bring in fees. No, it was... I think the volunteer dynamic of it relied on goodwill. Because also we had things like, you know, if like a lot of parents would bring their kids, the kids didn't want to be there. You had waiting lists in some of these clubs. So if the child was like misbehaving or wasn't into it, it's an easier conversation to have. Like people are volunteering here. It's doing it for free. I think if you introduce money to things, it introduces complication. Then you need a lot more governance and oversight.
What was it for anyone that's completely has missed the Coder Dojo hype? What was it? Is it?
So Coder Dojo is a global movement of free programming clubs for young people. And it's a very special and particular environment in these clubs where it focuses on more so the process of learning how to code, learning how to Google for the answers or ask the people sitting next to you before you ask the mentors, focusing on building things that are cool or impactful, or they're trying to build a yet another social media scheduling tool or something. And the values are definitely around experiencing that magic of building things and creating and having fun rather than, you know, we need to churn out a generation of startups or something. And a couple of years ago, the Coder Dojo Foundation merged with the Raspberry Pi Foundation. So now we're part of that big family.
How did that happen?
So we had, I think it was year two or three. Somewhere between year two and three. Coder Dojo was this like grassroots volunteer movement, but one of the annoying things was that there was like no structured entity behind it to manage things like trademarks or be able to like be a structured interface to deal with industry, to like people wanted to donate equipment or support different dojos, handle that. Or even, you know, having someone full time to deal with all the emails that came in and inquiries or...
So when you left school, did you go into Coder Dojo or was this like a side hustle you had?
So I actually thought I was going to do a startup. I joke about social media scheduling tools because that's what I built first. And I'd like to thank Enterprise Ireland for my feasibility study grant. that would be, I thought what was going to happen after I finished the Leaving Cert, by the skin of my teeth, I got computer science in UCC. And thank God there was a high failure rate back then. Otherwise the points would have been higher and I wouldn't have gotten that course, but I deferred it and being like,
I'm a wonder kid. Wonder kids don't
go
to college.
No. I was like, well, based on anything in my experience the past 6 years, I am not good at academics. So like I need to,
did you believe there was a lot of hype around you when you were in school? Did, did you handle that well? Like, was that something that you, did you even acknowledge it? Did you even think that this was the thing, or how did that go?
Yeah, it surprisingly, it manifested in some unhealthy ways. I never did have my quite burnout or drug fueled meltdown on Stephen's Green, which is a shame. But no, I did get very anxious about what people thought about me. I did kind of, particularly working with kids, I was like, oh, you know, I can't be like you know, seen like falling out of trunk out of coppers because, you know, he works with kids and like,
okay.
There was so whatever about, you know, like me messing up, it's like, I don't want to disappoint young people.
That's a lot of pressure at 18. I don't mean to be patronizing, you're still a kid yourself, but like at 18, you're young. Like,
yeah, it was. And I didn't fully know how to handle it. And I think I was also a little bit afraid to appear vulnerable, to kind of look weak, because then you're also in this position where, you know, you want to like inspire people, encourage them. You have like a bit of ego. You want to like not appear like you're this this kind of child running this thing. And it was actually, I think it was like 3 years in where like I didn't also know how to look after myself. So like went straight into like working on Coder Dojo. There was a small timeline where I was trying to like do the startup and do Coder Dojo in parallel. It was clear that Coder Dojo was having a lot of impact on young people and was something very worthy. And there's this, I guess, this idea of like when you're building something, it can be like pushing a boulder uphill or pushing a boulder downhill. Coder Dojo was definitely pushing it downhill. So yeah, I very nervously told like Enterprise Ireland, like, oh yeah, thanks. Turns out it wasn't feasible, but maybe it's just the founder who's unfeasible, not the market.
That's the whole point of feasibility study, though. Fairness, like, yeah. You know, you win some, you lose some.
But so I worked on Coder Dojo, and working at full time, like I'd be ordering like Domino's at like 10 minutes to 3, because that's the one, I think the Domino's near Ranla or Rathmines, like it closes at 3 a.m. Yeah, so I'd be like, I'd like forget to eat or like be burnt out. I'd be like feeling, taking on all this stress of like, oh, there's these community things here. What if something goes wrong?
What were you doing like all day, like scrambling around trying to make the meetups happen? Or what was your, give me a typical day.
It could be like pretty mixed. Like you'd be, I have lots of vivid memories of like getting buses to like different parts of Ireland to help like set up clubs or like working in the website, or like once we got the team, once we start building the foundation, get the team in, we'd like try and go like meet fundraisers or like travel. There was definitely, yeah, much to, I think it was like pretty annoying in the media, because like they kind of, if people were sick of seeing me in the media, think of how I felt about myself, like the it's not you again, no mirrors in my house.
It's catch 22, right? Because you got to build a profile to build Coder Dojo, you got to be out there, you got to build that yourself.
And no boundaries is why you'd be afraid of like saying no to things, because like what if they don't invite me back? What if you know, or like, you know, like this is a nonprofit. Like, how could you not go out and, you know, spread the good word? Cause you like, you know, you feel tired, but like, what if, you know, a kid finds Coder Dojo? And like, that was a terrible thing. Like we create a lot of really positive impact in young people's lives. Mm. So then like, I'm like, I can't be selfish.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. You made a prison of your own making, essentially. But
fortunately I created a lot of revenue for a therapist on Harcourt Street. So, yeah, that was actually one coworker. I remember I showed up late to a meeting one morning because I think I woke up late, like had eaten late and kind of like ran out of bed. It was like 15 minutes to a meeting. And a coworker, she's just like, she was fed up with me and she was like, you can't do this. This isn't sustainable. Like this is disrespectful to others, you not having it together. And she said like, this is the contact details of a psychologist. Go see them and sort it out.
Nice.
And like that was one of the best things that happened to me.
I admire it. A lot of people won't have the hard conversation. We talked about it earlier and we'll talk about it later in the conversation. You know, hard now, easy later.
Yeah.
Like, that's a hard conversation to have, because I'd imagine the dynamic between you, you were like this, not deity. I won't blow it off your ego that much. But like you were this figure. You were this public figure. You were the head of the foundation. You were the guy. So not an easy conversation to have. You got to respect the person for that, all right?
Yeah, I think they say like one measure of success in your life is the number of difficult conversations you have. Mm. And the amount of times that people have had to have difficult conversations with me, I don't know if that makes me successful or not. I'm definitely on some receiving end of that. But
it also means you're open to it. I think it also means that they know you're willing to receive it.
And I think that's like, even I look at like where I was at 2021 and like my values or what I was scared of, and maybe like where I am today, I can see like a pretty big difference in that, I don't know, like relationship to like looking stupid or failing or appearance. So that's been, I think that was like quite a, for me, I find it very valuable to have gone through that and gone through that journey. And like, fortunately, like a lot of it, I think a lot of that maybe like, yeah, like just like struggles with mental health or feeling burnt out and whatever, like it was pretty, it was kind of kept private or didn't, I don't think it overly affected things externally, but they did get to a point where 3 years in, we were like, okay, we've got this foundation. We need somebody who's, can like replace me as CEO, who knows how to manage organizations like this, who can go kind of go from one, like if I went from zero to one, they can go from one to 10. Mm. Somebody knows what KPIs are and can define success for others and manage them. And like, I need to go learn these. First, I need to like go sort out my head and like recalibrate. And then I need to go learn these things.
What size was Kudra Dojo at then? And what age were you?
I think I was 21. I think the foundation maybe had five people working in it, and we had a few hundred clubs.
Okay, so it's starting to really get scale then.
Yeah, and I think Kudra Dojo at its peak, like pre-COVID, we had over 2,000 clubs across like, I think over like 180 countries.
Oof. How did you recalibrate then? Because it takes a lot of self-awareness to step back and go, well, I'm not the person to take this from 1 to 10. What did you do in that time?
I think the stepping back bit, I had definitely like burnt out pretty hard. So it was easy to see that, like, I think for like, you see a lot of young founders, and it is definitely possible for a young founder to grow with their business. I think if they've got the right supports around them, they're keeping a balanced life and their head is in check, and they get the right coaching to basically like plug their gaps as they go, or get kind of build those skills as new challenges present themselves, you can do it. Me, on the other hand, I was just like just totally spent. Even if I had some of those supports, I don't think I was in a place to be receptive to them, which is kind of like another idea of like, maybe I was running a bit of a sprint where it should have been treated as a marathon. And like, I think I was like, you know, alongside this, like I was still trying to have like a vicarious college experience. Like a lot of friends of mine were in St. Pat's and Drumcondra, so I was like sleeping on couches like every second night, or like, I remember like 1 year, like super burnt out. I won like the Aircom Spider like Internet Hero Award, and like I was really burnt out at the end of the night. So I went back to my friend's gaff in Drumcondra, and we just towards the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, I'm so tired. Like, thank you so much. And then just so like burnt out, I went back to my buddy's gaff and like was playing Nazi Zombies in Call of Duty. It was so.
Being a young person, important, yeah. Having that time.
We all have our meditative practices.
You know? I love Call of Duty. That is my plug-in, and that's my thing. Just to switch off.
Yeah.
I find gaming is really therapeutic.
Definitely.
Reading and gaming are my two things, which are kind of weird, quite nerdy. But it's interesting you say that, like, you know, your college experience. Not a lot of my friends, if they didn't go to college and they did a startup or they did a trade, they nearly all went back at some stage to have that experience because they felt they missed it. So they went back, did a master's. A friend of mine just went back, did an MBA. You know, that experience is important. That experience is a part of growing up. You don't have to do it, but there's something important there.
There is. I think having that, like one of the things I definitely underestimated is how much you mature in your, I guess, late teens, early 20s, even mid to late 20s. I still feel like I'm maturing every day.
I think I often think the people who were impacted definitely by COVID was the people 18 to 20, those 2 years, whereby they left school, they went to college in the bedroom, did the first year in the bedroom, did the second year in the bedroom. You're like there's a lot of transformative experiences there. Like, it sounds silly, but it's not. Like the leaving cert holiday, moving away to college, getting your first house, cooking your first dinners, you know, fucking up for the first time. You know, I think in second year in college, that's when it's like, now it's on you. Not in school anymore. First year is a gimme. Gonna let you go. Let you slide in first year. Now it's up to you. Turn up or don't turn up, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a tipping point there, because school is very formulaic. We talked about education earlier. I think school is very kind of like, here comes the knowledge, open up wide, and it's just fed into you, and you just learn to turn up, and you know, whereas in college is that time where you're like, whereas for you, Coder Dojo was your college. It was like sink or swim now, but it's too probably much on the extreme side of things, whereas all on you.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a super valuable experience. I'm like super proud of everything that we did and like the impact that Coder Dojo's had. And like, I still think it's just absolutely mad that there's that many people that volunteered and like had that reach on young people. And like, it's weird for me because like, it's like in a way I was involved in starting it and getting up and running, but like the impact, like it's not attributable to me, whatever. It's like every single person that runs one of these clubs or decided that they want to see it in this community. Do I take credit for it at parties? Maybe. but it's been amazing just to see it grow and spread, and the amount of, the amount of impact that it's created in the world.
The butterfly effect of that must be interesting, because that's what, 2011. So it's like, you know, nearly 13 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. There's probably a lot of people have gone through that, have now gone on to build cool stuff. And you'd love to know, wouldn't you? You'd love to like go back and trace back some of the people that have gone through, like, where are they now?
Yeah, it's been like, I saw one tweet, which was that kind of style of how it started and how it's going.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
It was, it was them as like a kid in Coder Dojo at a computer. And then the next one is them on their like their first day at working at Google. So fortunately it's been all positive, and I don't think it's ruined anyone's life, but you know,
well, it's unlikely. We'll wait for those tweets. In fairness, that's cool though. But that's important, right? Like we talked a bit earlier about, you know, a lot of the world is temporary. It's, you know, it's very kind of like got here today, gone tomorrow. Mm. Like there's a lasting impact to something like that, James. Like the impact you have on someone's future, just that like flip of a coin. They went to Coder Dojo and discovered that, hey, I have a bit of talent. Maybe I'm not, you know, academic at history, or maybe I'm not burning into this, but I can program and I can, computers might be my thing.
Yeah. And I think you, I think in that environment, like you see, I've seen like kids from like a diverse range of background go to Coder Dojo and find their thing. Or even like Bill has a great story being at one Coder Dojo asking a attendee there who used a wheelchair about like, well, what's your favorite part of Coder Dojo? And the kid was like nobody sees my wheelchair. It's not a hindrance. So that's, you know, you kind of hear stories about that and you're like, wow, there's many realities that we're not seeing that it's having quite an impact there. And I think it's like in more recent years, as I've done stuff that like I went to the other end of the spectrum and like optimized for like trying to create like wealth and material gain. And like that was like the annoying thing about like nonprofits, you're like KPI is like, well, you know, how many childhood's imaginations did we, you know, spark today?
It's tough to track that KPI in fairness.
Exactly.
Yes.
and then the other extreme is like, well, you know, like, you know, what's our like current like revenue or like MRR? That's a lot more of like a easier metric to quantify and see. And but the thing that I find about, building some projects or purely optimizing for income is it wasn't as like personally satisfying, or it didn't feel as good as when you're helping people or improving somebody's lot in life. So it's kind of a balance I've tried to find over the last few years, is building things that can be like financially sustainable and financially rewarding, so you have the resources to do the things that you want in life, but at the same time can have like positive impact for people.
Lovely segue. What happened next?
Yeah, I
you're good at this.
Yeah, I went to the other end of the spectrum. I went full capitalist. I tried to speed run materialism. I learned that after Coder Dojo, I had a bunch of gaps and things I wanted to plug. So I want to learn how to manage people, learn KPIs, wanted to learn how to look after myself. I was like effectively broke, even a little bit in debt after Coder Dojo. Turns out if you don't pay income tax for like 2 years as a stupid 19-20-year-old,
but all the good I was doing, does the tax man not count that?
I thought the revenue would be a lot cooler.
Where's my sound credits?
but that was also like totally self-inflicted, so no one can feel sorry. But I kind of came out of that experience being like, yeah, I would like to earn money now, please pay that back, and also learn these skills. So I ended up out in Dubai and became, it took kind of a year soul searching, spent time with a mentor, got introduced to some people. And the consensus from a lot of people is that like you should work on something that's not your baby, so you feel a healthy amount of detachment from it and can sleep at night.
Makes sense.
You should also try and make some like money and, you know, not be, just not necessarily be in like a striving state, but a thriving state for a while.
Good advice.
And get these skills because, you know, they've bitten you in the, like the lack of these skills has bitten you in the ass before, so they probably will again. So, end up in Dubai, got offered a role as CTO of a Groupon type equivalent out there, a daily deals company called Gabon, which was run by another Irish entrepreneur, Paul Kenny. Met him through a mutual friend. It was very surprising that they took a chance on me to be like a CTO at 21, which is many people would consider highly risky, as would I. But I was willing to kind of, I guess, grind for the first few months and try and plug those gaps. Did get my ass kicked. I think I got pretty close to getting fired at one point because my KPIs were down. And that was the kind of the agreement was that like, let's try this out. You've got these technical skills. We know that you're lacking here, but we'll get you executive coaching. You'll learn these things. The business is like 4 years old at this point. It's got, I think like maybe like it was like 60 to 80 staff who were working there.
So it's chunky. Yeah.
So it was stable and there was a team. So yeah, I remember like working, working very hard at that role. After a year that business was acquired. And then, myself, and Paul started looking at a bunch of different opportunities, and ended up partnering with a chain of supermarkets in Saudi Arabia to build a large online supermarket for them and did that for 2 years. Got a lot of experience in the region, exposed to a lot of different values.
This was 2012, 13.
This was, 2020, must have been 2014, 2015.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
So like the Middle East was just starting to open up then. That was early there.
Yeah.
I
was in Saudi Arabia when they started letting women drive, which personally I can't take any credit for.
Okay.
But it was very interesting to see. This is an extreme different set of values there, which we all know are derisive.
How did you find that personally? Because you've gone from one stressful situation to maybe arguably another. Whereby you've swapped one set of stress for another set of stress. What was that like personally for you?
Yeah. I was beginning to think that I was the problem in all these situations.
Well, it was too early in the interview to bring it up. Yeah. Like 29 minutes in, like I can't diagnose yet.
Intervention. Yeah. Surprise. We have your original psychologist here.
It's going to come to the curtain behind you.
Again, I went through another set of experience, particularly because a lot of my thinking at that point was that like, I want to have the exit. I want to show people I'm like not a one trick pony who can only like do a charity and spend other people's money. Like that's a very cynical and pessimistic outlook, but my head was in those places at times. And I think if you take a look at like people's motivation to do things, like definitely like ego and status is a big drive, and like put my hand up and like that was a drive back then.
We all have it. I think we learned to control it, but we all have an ego and you need a bit of it. You need a bit of an ego.
Yeah. And the good thing was that was the backdrop for when I had a pretty big burnout. I worked pretty hard, thought a significant life event was going to happen. Didn't quite happen. So it was kind of...
You said a significant life event. What do you mean?
I thought I was going to make a bag, which is like the... I thought that I was going to like have that windfall moment where like I have as people politely put it, liquidity event. And then, you know, I could do the things like buy my mom a Tesla. And then, you know, I'd have like the nest egg so I could start investing in people. You know, I'd be like one of the people who'd be on this podcast. So, yeah, I know. I just threw 50K in, you know, a small check, a small angel. And you'd be like, all right, Pat, we get it. You know?
Shout out Pat Phelan. We all know who it is.
Yeah, Pat Phelan said that the thing he doesn't like about the type of business he wouldn't invest in is a solo founder or single entrepreneur. And personally, as a solo entrepreneur, I have to agree. He's
the irony. Right.
Yeah.
Look, I think we'd all be lying if we didn't think that would be a great event. Like if we often all sat back and went, that'd be sweet, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And that's what we put on a pedestal. If you take a look at like most of the times when you read tech news, it's either somebody raised money or somebody exited. And I think particularly for a young person, it's a very easy place to slide into to say, I need to do this, or like my, you know, if I want to be friends with some of these entrepreneurs or people I respect, I have to achieve this thing so that they'll stay friends with me.
Social proof. Social proof is exceptionally important. And that's how you kind of like shortcut. Oh, why do I want to get intro to that person? Oh, well, they've done this. Oh, okay, cool. Brilliant. Intro. You know, there is, and that is important because you can't make 1,000 decisions every single day, and you can't, like we talked about earlier, meet people for coffee and do discovery calls all day to like sift through. So you need shortcuts as a human. So like it's completely understandable like why social proof would be something we strive for.
And it's, and the funny thing is like it, even I think like after I walked away from that, not having attained that, which I thought it was, and feeling kind of beat up, and you kind of build this narrative in your head where you're like, oh, I got so close and this happened and it would have happened, blah, 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 blah. When I started meeting up with people afterwards, some people were like, I didn't realize you were in the Middle East for 4 years, like I don't care about this, or people who I would like were successful, who I thought like, oh man, like these people will only stay friends with me if, you know, like I'm also successful or if I'm on that trajectory, like they didn't care. They I think if anything, they liked me more because I made them feel better about themselves. They're like, or even like there was one, like I'm bootstrapping at the moment. Like I do the nomad thing, but like even today, like sometimes I like live at home a bit just to like balance income. And I met another entrepreneur this morning who like in the past year, like sold their company for like a significant amount, is in like now a different space. And we're just like talking about those two different experiences about like, you know, getting the air coach home and living with parents for a bit before you kind of go off and do the digital nomad thing again. Bootstrapping versus like their situation. So yeah, there was a lot of things and ideas I built up in the head, definitely around my ego or self-worth that were totally untrue.
We do that though.
We do. We're so good at it.
We always look at like, I look at you and go, James, I got to figure it out. You look at me. Well, maybe you don't look at me, but you look at other people and you go, God, they've got that sweet, isn't it? And again, you know, social media kind of reinforced that narrative of like, you know, oh my God, that's so cool. And there is, and you do look, we talked about this earlier, you look for the playbook, you look for the shortcut. And I talked about this with James McCormick, who was with us last week, about like, no one gives a shit about you.
Yeah.
As soon as you, the quicker you realize that, everyone is in their own head. Someone explained it to me, a great analogy, when someone drives by you in a really fancy car, the person in the car is like, look at that guy. He thinks I'm an absolute legend. And all you think is, how much of a legend would I be if I was driving that car?
Yeah.
And that was the best analogy that was ever explained to me about like the status game. Because all you think about is yourself. We're narcissistic creatures at heart, you know? And you kind of think, as soon as you realize people don't really give a shit. People genuinely mean you well. Very few people are out to get you. There's that narrative of, oh, they're out to get you. Not really. That's the narrative you've enforced in your head because shit didn't work out for you.
Yeah.
As soon as you realize people aren't out to get you, people don't care in a good way, do your own thing.
Yeah.
And just do your thing. Fly your freak flag. Do whatever you want to do, but just stop caring so much.
And I think that is like one of the antidotes to like failure or like being perceived as stupid or something. Like if I like... I know if I say something stupid in this podcast or if I make a fool of myself, within reason, no one's going to remember it next week, or, it's very unlikely that, people won't retain. Now, maybe I'll try and impress myself and say something really bad.
How far can I put it?
Exactly.
This is nearly 300. Next week could be 300. I've said a lot of stupid things. I've said a lot of things on like, look like a fool, but I don't care because my intention is good. My intention is to put out good things, to have good conversations with people and overall, not leave the world a better place, but like overall put out good stuff. Am I learning? Are you learning? Are we having a good time? Are we enjoying the journey? And I don't really care if someone like, we were laughing during the break. Ben was like going through the internet, the comments on my TikTok for like the clips we put up. Horrific. Like horrific. Like Ben's giggling in the background, but like, it's true. I never look at them ever because I don't care. I don't care what user 77777 says about like me or the guest. Like one of them was just like nerd.
Yeah. I'm so sorry for writing all those things. About you, but I don't know.
Let me on the podcast. I'm going to keep writing. I'm going to keep trolling you. But like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, to me, when it ever happens, like, I'm like, feed the algorithm, baby.
Yeah.
Just flag that algorithm. Keep. I'd rather people have a reaction of some sort. Mm. Love it or hate it, but just feel something.
Yeah.
The worst is when you do this vanilla content. I don't want to do that either. But like, just do your own thing.
Well, there, yeah, there is a, I think, you know, when you're trying to, I guess, talk about things, you talk about like being authentic, like, there's already like a Tim Ferriss out there. There's already like a James Clear. Like I tried to do about like, being able to fake being smart, and that you take like the cliff notes of like one of these books, you reword them slightly so it looks like original thought. Like those are already things that have like been done to death. But it's novelty that a lot of people look for, or, and it's like, I think these days increasingly it's getting easier to spot people who are like inauthentic.
Yeah.
And
because the more stuff you put out, like, so I couldn't, not that I couldn't be inauthentic, but like if I'm putting out stuff every week, I can't be flip-flopping. I can't be like, oh yeah, James, you're so right. And next week going, that guy, what a dickhead. You know, you can't, you got to just be yourself.
Mm.
It's exhausting putting on a front. Like you put on, like I said this to James again last week about like, I used to have a work Gary and a home Gary.
Yeah.
You know, and these I felt it had to be this like strict and rules and da da da. And it just wasn't me. And I was just like eating myself up inside, trying to be something I was and trying to pretend that I was like this high powered manager when I just hated it.
Yeah.
Hate how it made me feel.
I think, I mean, maybe it does take a while to get to this place, like to get comfortable being authentic. Mm. Like, because not everybody has a lot of people don't have the luxury of, let's say, not having like full repercussions or like people or environment where it might not seem as easy to be themselves. Like there's this idea of like, for example, like the whole trope of like everybody should use psychedelics because it makes themselves more creative. But like, I don't want my accountant to do psychedelics. Like
on a Saturday, John, knock yourself out. But in general,
I definitely want him to be by the book.
You're like, doing the balance sheet. Yeah, I know. Look, we're all looking for rules, aren't we? Like we're all like, what's the new thing?
Yeah.
What's the new thing? I want to do that.
But it's, I think it is a process of getting like more comfortable. And for me, definitely it's, it was over the few years as I kind of began to see that a lot of beliefs that I had were challenged, and I kind of went from like a very high of like, oh my God, like this thing is going to happen, I'll be this and whatever. Then to like being burnt out playing Fortnite back at my parents' house. And
What changed? What reshaped for you that time?
After I left the Middle East, I spent about 2 months living back in Cork. I had kind of left the business and left everything behind, but I would turn on my phone once a week just to, like on a Friday, look at WhatsApp, make sure that the world kept on spinning. And
you'd turn on your phone once a week.
Well, I was totally stepped away because I burned out in like a spectacular fashion. Now, a testament to my amazing leadership skills, I had full redundancy and had a team built and whatever. But it got to a point where things that I thought were going to happen weren't going to happen. I had kind of put a lot of myself into building this organization, very proud of what we had built and achieved. But again, I was burnt out. When I didn't think I was going to get what I thought I was going to get, I was like, well, you know, do I still want to be doing this? Is the activity a reward? And I think that was like a lesson how I reshaped what I work on. I think you can work on something where unless you get that outcome, you might see it as a failure, or the thing that you can do, the activity can be the reward.
Okay.
And if
so was that the key learning?
That was the key learning. If you're going to spend 90% of the time doing the thing and 10% of the time enjoying the outcome, then it truly makes more sense to enjoy doing the thing 90% of the time. And that way, if it doesn't work out or if other people don't want it, then you still had like great fun. Like a product I've been building for the last like 3 years, Conjure, kind of very different way of building it. I've been building it for me. I've been optimizing for building what I want to see in the world versus other people. I don't know if it's going to work out or not. I've got customers, I've got people who use it every day, but it could still be a failure. But I've loved every second of building it. I've built it for like 984 days in a row and put over 5,500 hours. That's kind of inherent in the product. I should know these stats if that's into it. And I've loved it. And if it doesn't pan out, then at least I know a lot more about the space that I'm very passionate in. And I probably know more about building these systems than a lot of people. Built some amazing tech that I'm very proud of, which I've even like spun out quickly into other products that have like now even one that I built for myself to solve a problem has some customers. So it's, you know, if it's not a commercial, let's say if it's not a commercial success, it's still a success in so many other dimensions. Mm. So yeah, in a way it's kind of like a dating. Like you can go on a date and like it doesn't work out and you're like, oh, well, like was that a good use of my hour? Or you could go on a date and be like, let's go do this thing that I've always wanted to do. So like, at least if we don't get on, like I'll have like gone to that museum or gone to this place I want to check out or like, you know, learn something interesting new.
It's a good story or a good lesson.
Yeah.
They're the two kind of like spheres I look through at things.
I've gone on a lot of bad dates, which are mostly my fault, but I've learned to optimize.
Talk to me about the burnout because you've mentioned it quite a bit.
Mm.
What drives you to burnout? Because it's obviously happened to you multiple times through the course of your career. What drives you there?
I think several factors, and I think kind of burnout. There's many roads to burnout, but it's a singular destination, which I'd kind of classify as like depression, the lack of motivation to work on anything, difficulty of getting out of bed. Like some like very dark places, like mentally or thought process wise. Typically how I've driven myself to that place, I'm very good at it. I'm very qualified at getting to burnout, but mostly it's been self-imposed pressure or overly feeling external pressure. So if I don't build this thing, if I don't do this, I'm a failure, or working very hard where, effectively if your entire well-being is predicated on the outcome of like one event, that is an extremely turbulent existence. Any threat to that outcome, all of a sudden that's like amplified. Mm. If you're not eating properly, sleeping properly, health and wellness and diet kind of make up the fabric of your reality. So if you're like underslept, like there was a period of like, I don't know, like 2 months where it's like sleeping 4 hours a night because we had serious grind. I was working with developers across the Middle East, South America and Europe. And like there was a lot of fun. We had also like a lot of times like the struggle, you enter this flow state. It feels amazing to move mountains, but there is a diminishing point of returns.
Are you addicted to chaos?
I enjoy periods of chaos. There's a time, like, I know I've done like, you know, 18, 20 hour programming sessions. Like if there's a weekend, I enjoy like starting like early on a Saturday. Cause you can, if you're working a thing, you're like, well, you know, I could, you know, build this feature over the space of next week and, you know, wind down at the end of each day, pick back up, take an hour to get back into that mental context and place, or I could just like power through it and, listen to some like great tunes and like bang it out. But then you go to bed at like 6 a.m. and you're like, oh my God, what is my life?
Mm. So have you reshaped that? Is that something you've learned to cope with? Have you found balance?
Yes, I have found balance. I'm a big fan of using systems, being systematic about my well-being, which is mostly like making sure that I eat at the right times of the day, like 1 p.m. and 6 p.m., because often that's a thing I can let slip, getting sunlight exposure at the right time. And it's not to necessarily like try and optimize or eke out more productivity. It's just to stay sane because my default state is not to keep a good balance of things. Mm. So using systems is like been pretty important for keeping me balanced. Now obviously there's like times where it's, I think, more profitable to like lean into something or a situation requires it. That's totally fine as well. Mm. When you get wrapped up in something, but by and large, making sure that I have all the, I guess the right foundation, has been pretty important to me avoiding burnout. And I haven't always done that, evidently.
So what are your systems? Bring me through some. You mentioned some of them there, eating at the right time. I share a lot of these. I like to have a lot of like rigid systems, which then gives me the freedom. So my goal for this year is to kind of like be on or off.
Yeah.
Not this low level of intent, low level of anxiety all the time. This low level of like kind of on all the time. I'm trying to find that off switch. So when I'm on, and when I'm off.
Yeah.
And it's not that easy, but I found by having really rigid structures, it's a lot very similar. Like, you know, a certain diet, I do intermittent fasting, I work out this many times per week, I do this many times, do this that many times. That sounds like sucking the joy out of life, but for me, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, I can feel my like creative energy being dragged away from here. But
it just replaces that anxiety of like, what should I be doing today? Did I do that today? I would do things for a really good period of time and then drop off.
Yeah.
And then hate the outcome and then try to get back to that place again. So I found by having these rigid structures, it gives me so much more freedom and so much more relaxation, and I'm less anxious and I'm less kind of like yo-yoing between like high energy, low energy, high energy, you know, depression, height, you know, which is it? Like,
you're right in that, like our routines can take, they can have a cognitive overhead. Like if you wake up and you're like, what am I going to do today? Where am I going to eat? What am I going to wear? Am I on top of all my projects? I hate having open loops. So like one of the things I used to hate is going to bed and like living in fear of like, did I respond to everybody? Is there something I'm missing? Yeah. And I previously used to do that when I was not on top of my inbox. So like doing things like having a weekly review just to make sure that I'm on top of everything, or have managed people's expectations, or be on more front when I think I can do something or can't do something. I mean, you can still have like chaos in your life, but you kind of like try and put boundaries on it to a degree.
Exactly. Talk to me about managing expectations, because I think that's so important. I think Irish people are woeful.
Oh,
sure, it'll be grand. Sure, look. Yeah. Don't talk about that. Yeah. We'll get to that one. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, right? Actually, that famous phrase.
Yeah. Just another week. I know it was, that's something I really got my ass kicked at the beginning, because I hate giving, I'm such a people pleaser. Like I hate giving like bad news or saying no. And one of the things that changed for me, because I used to tiptoe around people and be like, I won't say no, but I'll just try and like manage it around or
not have
back.
To give an answer.
Yeah. But the truth of reality is like the earlier you say no, or the earlier you can find out if you're not a match, and then you save everybody a lot of time. So one could argue that it's like, it's more ethical and kinder of you to say no earlier on, because then you can both find the right match.
Yeah.
So if it's not a fit, it's not a fit. So managing expectations, where I got to was, I think having a pretty clear idea of everything else that was going on in my life, because it could be very easy to say yes to something and then you're like, oh fuck, like there's actually this responsibility I have over here, or that's going to collide here. Nobody estimates time correctly, but at least having a rough idea of your time and commitments, so you have an idea of what your bandwidth is for things. That's totally also like okay to say, I would love to do this, but I can't. I'm limited, or let's talk in a few weeks. So I got pretty good at getting a grasp on like what my personal goals and mission were, so I could stay on that path or aligned, but also being able to identify if something better came along or something more fitting to it. Pretty quickly, if somebody had like an ask or want, saying it can fit in here or I can do it by this date, but most importantly, finding out if something wasn't a fit or not, instead of like trying to leave it in the gray and be like, I'll manage that later, I'll give like a half yes.
I enjoyed your phrase you told me earlier, hard now, easy later, easy now, hard later.
Yeah.
It's so true though. Like, because again, it goes back to the piece we talked about like people don't really care. They just want an answer. They just want to go, are we doing that, James, or no? And I shared some of my frustration with you about similar things.
And I've always been the technical co-founder mostly, and the business co-founders are really good about making you feel bad if you say no. That's why I always look for a good, if somebody can make me feel bad for saying no, I know that they'd be a good business co-founder. People like nobody, this has happened a ton in my life. Nobody were like, hey, James, you're actually looking kind of burnt out. Maybe you should like ease off, or... And a lot of people, sometimes they just don't know. It's not that they're malicious or anything. It's just that they're not dialed into their tunes. So yeah, you being considerate of your own, I guess, bandwidth or self-preservation is pretty important. But a lot of times people will make things seem bigger than they are. There was a thing I got told years ago that like, a lot of people are like Teflon, like tasks don't stick to them. Like you see the best CEOs are like Teflon, like all these tasks will come down and
good delegators.
Yeah. And it will just slide off them. And then there's like the idiots with nets like me being like, oh, I'll just catch all these things. Like
I'll get rewarded for doing all the hard work. Yeah. And you kind of realize that as you get older, you're like, No, it's about being a good router.
Yeah.
You just root tasks. You connect people and you do things like that. And then as you get older, you kind of realize, okay, it's not about like being the guy who says yes to everything, because then you end up doing a half job on everything. Mm. Is that why you build Conjure?
In the sense of building it.
Is that what you were you seeking that in your life? Were you seeking that kind of like order and structure and kind of like, were you scratching your own itch essentially?
Yeah. I started building Conjure for me. And it kind of began with, I got very interested in like well-being and, you know, life satisfaction, a bunch of these ideas. I think everybody, you know, in their mid-20s kind of has that like,
why are we crisis. All here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, look, it's time for me to read Power of Now. I just hit 25. I got pretty interested in researching that space. And then, I got very interested in the idea of like trying to be systematic about well-being. And like, if you build systems around it, does it actually make you happier, or will it just increase the divorce rate? So I wanted to explore that whole space. I found that there was tools out there, but I was like, you know, why is there nothing that like, you know, when I track time, it can like increase, you know, if I want to do like, if I want to begin a reading habit, why is there nothing that I can start just doing like 5 minutes a day, work myself up to 30 minutes a day? That data not just completes a habit, but completes these objectives over here. As I got into the space more and learned a lot about these like different concepts and systems, it was like, there's not really a platform. Like there's nothing really that had this, had the ability to do like emergency modes of habits. Like consistency is one of the most important things about building habits and maintaining them. So like on the off days, you're definitely going to have where you don't feel like going out for a run, just putting on your shoes and going for like a small walk outside is enough.
Don't break the chain.
Yeah. And you just factor that into the model.
It's a great point you make, because I think a lot of people build for what it should be, not what it is.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the amount of like users I see who sign up who are like peak productivity state, they're like, I'm going to fix my life and get it all together. And then I know a short time later, they kind of go back from that peak motivation state back to reality.
Well, there's a huge burst of intensity in the first like 7 to 10 days, and then it slowly wanes. So why I was so interested in chatting about Conjure as well is that we do these accountability challenges every couple of months. I have a group and we do it all together. And there's a huge burst of excitement at the start.
Yeah.
We had like 65 people. We just finished one. And I keep them specifically very simple, right? 30 minutes. The first one we ever did was 30 minutes exercise every day. That's it. Define exercise however you see fit. As long as you exercise. It can be a walk, it can be 2 15-minute walks, it can be 3 10-minute walks. And people go, oh, no problem. That's so easy. Oh man, make it an hour. I'm like, nope, 30 minutes every day. The amount of people that finished it was very small. And then I added on little people like, oh, like add on more. So I was like, okay, added on like 30 minutes exercise, 10 minutes reading. And the numbers dropped again.
Yeah.
There was a huge spike and then this month it was 30 minutes exercise, 10 minutes reading and 3 smart tasks for your business. So I work off the metrics of body, brain and business, trying to have those 3 in harmony. And the drop off was even steeper. The sign up was steeper and the drop off was even steeper, because people are so enthused, but then bad days happen. But I'm always saying progress, not perfection. Progress, not perfection. Just keep chipping away. Just do one of them. Read for 10 minutes.
I love the idea of that motivation is ephemeral, but discipline is not. And discipline is a skill that you build up. You always think that people have it or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I wish it was more like James.
No, like, trust me. I can speak from personal experience. You do not want to be more like me.
But everyone looks at the other person going, my God. You know, it's like, no, it's hard work. It's not, there's no deity involved. It's just hard work.
Or even like that can like misrepresent. Like talking about that emergency mode, there's definitely been like a week where like I've been like super up against the ropes. And like my exercise each day has just been going out for a walk. And that's been success. And it's not that you need to be this like high performing individual. Success for a lot of people is just keeping their head above water when it's like they're going through a rough time in life. I mean, but I guess on the like consistency front, like you've been doing this consistently since like 2019. And like it's a lot of effort to do a podcast and source guests and have to talk to them. And
it's only now I feel like I'm in the flow. the last 6 months have just changed mentally. I've just changed about how I think about it and how I do it. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of effort. Exactly. Like, podcasts are very funny because they're so easy to start. I get like five messages a week. I'm going to start a podcast. What should I do? Like, commit to a year. Yeah. That's what I started saying. Because before I'd be like, let me tell you all the wonderful things. Mm. And I'd spend hours with people going, okay, you do this, then that, and then this gear. We talked about like the gear fetish earlier, like all this kind of stuff about the microphones and what microphones should I get. And now I'm like, don't worry about any of that. Are you going to do it for a year? And it just like short circuits people's brains when I say that to them. They're like, what? I don't know. I was like, unless you're going to do it for a year, I would think about that first. Because why? What's your why? Mm. But like, it's going to be hard. Like, yeah. Podcast is not like, not fame and fortune. It's not quick riches. But it's like anything.
Mm. I've heard this from like the advice that some YouTube creators like give is like, just do your first 50 videos.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to suck. Yeah. You can't underestimate the learning that you have in those first 50. The first 50 aren't even about getting views. It's just getting into the flow. It's removing the mental friction to doing these things.
Yeah.
Like, with Conjure, in trying to figure out what I was going to build next, I had this heuristic of like, what am I willing to work on for up to 2 years with no external validation? And like, more importantly, what am I willing to do at least 100 hours in without panicking in those first 100 hours? And only when I have 100 hours of, I guess, data or experience doing the thing, then I can be like, do I actually want to do this or not? Because I think that you've got your off days. You're going to like feel into it some days. You're not like, your motivation is all over the shop. But I think it's only when you look at something over like a long time horizon can you see. I guess that's the idea of like all achievement comes from like consistent effort over a long time horizon.
I love that, the 100 hours.
That's I was sending that to a friend recently. Like, since building it, I built time tracking into it, so I track all my time, and that feeds into a bunch of stuff. But if there's like a day where like I go to bed and I'm feeling tired and burnt out, I'm like, oh, did I just like, what did I even do today? Did I? Like I feel like I haven't achieved anything, or I feel like I can look at, I know, some of the items I ticked off my list or the time I put in and be like, I moved the needle a bit. Or there's days where like, I can be like, I did at least 15 minutes of work towards my goal today, or remove the friction.
1%. That's what I think in my head. I'm like, 1% today, Gary. It's funny. I delayed signing up to Conjure till today. I wanted that delayed gratification of like having you on. And now I'm like, now we're going to sign up, because I wanted that kind of like that anticipation, because everything's so, again, the immediacy thing. I'm like, just delay signing up, talk to him, and then that'll be your kickoff.
It's going to be the best week of your life until the motivation fades.
No, I've been putting the reps. I'm ready, baby. I'm ready to graduate from Notion to Conjure. I'm going to make that leap. But like, I've built all these systems for myself, and I tick it off every day, because like you say, especially as a solo founder, especially as an entrepreneur, like, it's so hard to zoom out. And I really want to flag that thing you just said, external validation, because that's so important to like ignore for a while, because you have to, because no one after the first 50 hours is going to go, he's a great lad, well done, this is the best thing ever. Mm. I love it. Like, it's just, no one, you're not even going to make a dent. I always laugh when I see people like, oh, we're in stealth mode. I'm like, well, you're going to be in there for a fucking long time, because no one's going to care when you do launch. You know, like, you forget, like, you're going to have to tell people 50, 100, 200 times going, working on this thing. Mm. So many people are like, we know.
Yeah.
That then you've realized, okay, now people are starting to get it.
I think with the, I mean, like, a lot of people's drives is like the external validation. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily. It can obviously veer into like into toxicity, but like, yeah, I think that's a real sign of like how willing you're long to forego people telling you that you're great and amazing.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I enjoy doing is like, if I'm listening to an artist or someone I like, is looking at their Wikipedia page and just seeing how many years they had to like slug it out.
I do this too. Yeah.
And you read about like all these like famous like writers or artists where like, yeah, you definitely have people who like skyrocket to notoriety in like the first year. But most people, like, it's a few years of grinding, knowing the space inside out, making mistakes. Like, a thing I struggled with was everything with Coderojo happened kind of very quickly from like 18 to 21. And like, there was as I say, like there was definitely elements of it I wasn't equipped to deal with. And afterwards, I had like this mindset of like, am I a one-trick pony? Like there's, I attribute a lot of it to like right place, right time. The world was moving in that way. If it wasn't me, it would be somebody else. A lot of luck. A lot of like networker again to meet, like just, I've had so many amazing people in the Irish tech scene who were very kind to me and lifted me up. So a lot of unfair advantages through network. But off the back of that, I was like, well, yeah, am I just lucky or can I reproduce this stuff? Can I become like a full stack entrepreneur and learn marketing and learn
governance? That's the curse of early success, isn't it?
It's, yeah. And they, like you want, like, you know, I'd love to think that I'm great. Maybe secretly I do think that I'm great, but the, yeah, it was a lot to re-examine and be like, okay, I'm going to have to like go from the ground up and like get kicked in the teeth a lot. Like with Conjure, I didn't have another user for like the first 6 months, which is totally against conventional wisdom. I agree. If you're optimizing for building something that consumers want and others will give you money, that's a different kettle of fish. But in optimizing for exploring and you might change things randomly or you don't know where it's going to end up. I think it's fine to get conviction in what you want to build before you share it with people. And that's another form of expectation management. But it was only when I had some people using like daily for 6 months that I turn on billing. And at every point in that journey, I was like, I'm okay if it's not externally a success. Now, like I also like bootstrapped, so like I'd be like juggling odd jobs here and there and like supporting myself. But yeah, I was just so passionate about building and so much conviction that that was kind of inconsequential. Like I wasn't, it would be a different story if I was like, oh my God, if this thing does not work out, I'm going to lose the family farm.
And I love having people like yourself on and all the different stories because it shows there's not one way. That's important because we get obsessed by the playbook and the one way and the one way, and you have to, and the best way people build startups and the best people I've spoken to, they do it in the way that is natural to them. You're building Conjure in the way that is natural to you, that feels good, that you respond well to it. You're not going, right, we need to get to 1,000, 1,000 daily active users, and then we need to get like 10 million funding, and then we need to scale this to the moon. Like the external validation piece is when I chat to founders, I'm like, oh, what's the goal now? And they're like, oh, funding. And you're like, you're like 9 months at it, like
on that treadmill.
Like, and then it's so repetitive that people come back and go, yeah, damn, it's funding, it's killing us. You're like, well.
And it's not that one way is better than another.
Exactly.
But they're all different. And like,
depends on the entrepreneur. It depends on you. It depends on the founder, yeah. I think.
And like, you know, Conjure as a product and what I've wanted to see in the world is very particular. There's like, I was telling you earlier, there's something I built to automate the marketing of Conjure, which is a lot of marketing tools are like, selling pickaxes to other people, which is how I feel. Like there's definitely some hater in me on that stuff.
It's the best way to be. I'd love to do it. Yeah. Sells shovels in the gold rush. Exactly, it's the dream.
But Gary, if you want to pick, I'm not saying like, you know, for $50 a month, I can solve all your problems.
Luck.
But
give me the quick fix.
That was basically using AI to perform a bunch of marketing strategies for people who hate marketing, suck at marketing and don't want to do marketing. So I started building it for me to solve my marketing problems because typical like technical entrepreneur, I love building the product, built some amazing things, feel super proud, got all the unit tests, got some people who use it daily, have had customers for close to 2 years, but my top of funnel is shocking. Like I do $1,300 MRR. It's kind of interesting to see like, yes, I've proven that like I can build this thing. I've proven that some people will use it. I've proven that people will use it daily. I've proven that people will, will pay for it. So a lot of building this has felt like checking these boxes and moving on to the next checkbox. And my most recent problem is like, okay, I've proven a bunch of these things. Now let's see if I can actually scale it or if there's a big enough market to make it financially sustainable, which I might not be, and that's fine. But then the other approach of building something that's kind of purely optimizing for marketing and like it's not necessarily producing anything that I want to see new in the world, but you know, it's just another weapon in the attention economy.
So your driver now is to get users to build awareness of what it is.
Yeah. And that's uncomfortable for someone who's technical. Like, a mentor of mine told me that tech sprints are typically 2 weeks and have a 90% chance of success, whereas marketing sprints are typically 2 days and have a 90% chance of failure. And it's basically trying like 100 things and hoping to God that one of them work. Yeah. And like, that sounds terrifying to me. That's difficult to quantify. Sometimes marketing can feel like manipulation, but I was told recently that the difference between persuasion and manipulation is persuasion is that you're trying to give something that will make somebody's life a lot better and convince them to use it and teach them, whereas manipulation is trying to sell them something that they don't need. So,
well, in fairness, you're building a product that improves people's lives. So yeah. I think you're fairly well on right side of history here, is that what they say?
But maybe you charge more for the manipulation pricing plan. I'm not sure.
So what is the next, before we get to a rapid fire round, what is the next kind of, like, you've kind of half answered it there through you want to build awareness. What does the next kind of 12 months look like for you and Conjure?
So I hit the 3-year mark of building it. I've proven a lot of theories that I have and explore a lot of features, kind of done 3 or 4 passes at them. So the next 12 months is scaling it, is putting it out to the world, doing a lot of marketing that I've put off, and basically seeing if there's a big enough market for it. And, you know, the happy path is that it grows to the scale that I see it, and that it begins this, I suppose, more compounding effect where hire more people, generate more revenue, and it can be what I want to see in the world. Or maybe there's not enough of a market for it and I had great fun building it. I've built some great tech. I've got people who it's important to. And maybe I just continue to work on it for the next 10 years. It's very important to me. It's something that I want. So it's not going away.
Well, the chances are, if you're doing 1300 MMR, the chances are when you turn on the marketing funnel, it can definitely support you. It can definitely probably support a very, very nice lifestyle.
And there's no investor who's kind of be like, you know, James, you got to...
Going to need that 10 bag,
yeah,
James.
Exactly.
Going to need that, or, gonna need that return soon.
Yeah, my kids are about to go to college. Yeah. Like, is there any chance you're going to exist? You know, like
We need to raise a new fund here, James. Come on.
Yeah. So, and that's people say raising VC is like giving rocket fuel to your product. But the question is, like, do you have a rocket or not in the first place? And like, I didn't know if I had a rocket. Like, maybe one that explodes in the launch pad. I'm not sure. But so that's Conjure. There's some other exciting stuff around the thing I recently built to automate this marketing within the like last 2 weeks. Total opposite approach. It now is 3 customers. Where like, I built the thing for myself, showed it to some friends. They want to use it for their product. And I just did the total opposite thing that I've previously done, where I was like, I spin up a new Stripe account, spin up a terrible landing page.
Nice.
Didn't even have the thing deployed. Like, they just, the first payment was over Revolut. The second two were over Stripe, and I ran the thing manually for them. So we'll see where that goes. That's kind of exciting, but
that is exciting.
That's more to scratch my own itch and being like, I don't, I hate marketing. So let me try and over engineer a solution to it. And yeah, with that, I'll probably play the game a little bit more with that.
That sounds like it has potential. No name yet, 2 weeks in.
It has it's called growthcast.ai. So hopefully by the time this is published, I'll have a
more fitting line. Growthcast.ai.
Yeah, it was originally called Growth Curse, because it's a curse that we have to do marketing. Our products are so amazing that people should know about them, obviously. It's a tragedy, but a friend told me that it might have a negative connotation. Growth. I thought it was cool and edgy, but...
You're trying to find the sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
I want to talk one more thing before I let you go. You're doing the digital nomad thing. How's that working out for you?
Pretty great. I've been doing it for a few years, living between Japan, Ireland, and the US. Got friends in different cities. It's a nice balance of getting to see different people, being in different cultures. I think we can get a little bit of island fever here at times. I definitely have had in the past. So going to Japan, you're like, wow, I'm like totally insignificant. It's been nice. I've kind of like learned the different tricks to traveling around. We'll often like bring a secondary screen with me, so that I have like a setup in each of these.
Just countries. Walking through the airport, monitoring.
Hand. In like the carry on, the
wheeling a suitcase on this side, a Mac monitor on the other side.
So it's been a positive experience. I don't. there is downsides into it in terms of like some forms of stability or but I'm enjoying the novelty of it at the moment.
I think it's the world's fundamentally changed. I think the world is after COVID. I think people have kind of gone, huh, a lot of things I thought were true aren't. I don't actually have to stay rooted at the same spot. I don't have to go to the office 5 days a week. 9 to 5 actually doesn't make sense. Like, there's been a fundamental shift, I think, in how you think on a lot of levels.
And I think living this lifestyle has meant that I've got the most sophisticated approach to time zone handling in my products, because I've been bitten in the ass. Okay. I don't care what anyone says. It is possible to have 30-hour days. I will fight any person who says otherwise.
So it's good to see that burnout thing. You've got that under control. I'm glad you've just tacked on 6 more hours onto the day.
So the time zones are listening right now.
That's the real answer. Right, we're going to do a quick fire round. Questions? Mm-hmm. What book do you recommend every entrepreneur should read?
I'm going to cheat and say two. There's Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, which talks about if you can't choose the situation you're in, you can choose your attitude towards it. And then Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, which basically shows all the same problems, concerns, worries, vying for status, being afraid, that has all existed for ages.
Two phenomenal recommendations and two older books, which kind of, I love when people recommend older books, because you're like, what's the new thing? I'm a sucker for a new thing. Like, a new book comes out, I'm all over it. But it's only when you go back and look, going, we think like humans have evolved so much. Nah. It's the same for hundreds and thousands of years. What's something you didn't pay enough attention to early on, had to learn the hard way?
We've talked about it, but expectation management. I could have saved a lot of pain in my life and gotten to where I need to be earlier if I just found out if things were a fit or not earlier on.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
As listeners can tell, mental health. there's definitely been a lot of self-imposed suffering, where if I had managed myself better or looked after myself, I would have had a less turbulent existence. But there's also a lot of value that I've taken from it. I'm glad I got through that in my 20s.
I think you touched on it earlier, and actually meant to talk about it again earlier. Sometimes you can't be told. Sometimes you really, there are lessons you have to learn, which can often be the hardest ones, that no one can explain to you what it's going to feel like. Sometimes you have to go through it, and at the time it's horrific, but after the fact you're like, I never could have understood that, the empathy that's required and the grit it takes. We all have to go through it at some stage. I think it's how you react to it is the thing. It's like meditations. It's how you react to those situations. Exactly.
And we're all on our own path. You can't compare your path to someone else. There's too many different parameters. There's never a one-to-one. So, if you find yourself in those situations, as you said, it's not how you get into them, but it's how you deal with them.
Changing gears totally. What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
I would probably invest in the psychedelic therapeutic space and do more work there. I think that that's going to be something that's huge over the next few years. I think that there's a lot of pain in the world that can be solved by people using psychedelics.
Tim Ferriss has gone heavily into it. I know he spends a lot of money on research. What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
I carry a 1.5 liter bottle of water with me everywhere. Not just to avoid kidney stones. That's drinking 2 to 3 liters. Well, a lot of trips to the bathroom, but you'll avoid kidney stones. There's been probably a lot of my life I've been dehydrated. So I just carry that bottle of water with me with it everywhere.
I love that. It's a simple hack, but it works. I do the same thing. I've got one in the car. I throw it in the car every morning. Like it's a liter, a black liter bottle. I know when I've drank that, I do 3 of them. Good to go.
Simple as.
It's the simple advice is the best, right? Because you can stick with it. You know you've got a habits app. I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest in one person or company. What is it?
Oh, that's a tough one. And I'm not allowed to say it myself because I'm a bootstrapper.
Exactly.
I think that there's a lot of really great startups in Cork. And I'm not just saying this because I'm in a Discord group.
Cork some
of
them. Mafia, standard.
I think that if I was just to like shout out to some of the Cork people, like 2Desktop, Dave, doing amazing things, some incredible customers, like billion-dollar companies are his customers.
2Desktop, it's called.
2Desktop, okay. There's also Teletherapy. Dave and is just like, team there are fantastic, doing some really interesting stuff around the speech therapy space. So I'd invest in Cork. the People's Republic.
God, our listenership in Cork is already off the roof.
The Caribbean it's be better part of this. Ireland, as they tell Americans.
If you just start a new company in the morning, what would it be?
It would be in the psychedelic therapy space.
Okay. What do you believe that other people might find strange or strongly disagree with?
I think it's easier to fake looking smart than people think. And I think I've talked about like the, and I'm not just saying this because I looked at all the past episodes of the questions you asked and in a meta way, saw this question and then thought about it. I think a lot of times when people present themselves for great content, you can just find all that stuff elsewhere, reword it. Or if people think you're amazing for executing the strategy, like you can read all those strategies elsewhere, see what is a fit for you. Even like the failing thing, a lot of people fail, but it doesn't look like failure because they're just course correcting very quickly. Mm. It's indiscernible. So I try and fake being smart a lot.
That's why I like doing hour-long podcasts, because I find like radio interviews and stuff, they're so quippy. They're so like, give us the five talking points, and politicians and business leaders will go on, blah, 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 blah. Whereas on an hour, we go deep.
Exactly. Okay. There's no notes in front of me. I had to memorize them all in the bathroom before.
Just throwing your hand and you're sweating as you go through.
I was trying to look at trending terms, and I thought that being edgy and talking about psychedelic medicine, no.
We're in. I'll be adding the hashtag to it. Don't worry. What's one thing in your personal life do you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
Electrolytes. That's these little like sachets you can like pour into water and you can replenish your... If you're not getting like enough salt each day, or you're feeling like tired at the end of the day,
do you brand you use or a certain type of one?
It's like, because I move around so much, I just find whatever on
so electrolytes. On
yeah,
cool. I like that. That's a good answer. What's your final piece of advice for any entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur listening?
People don't care if you become successful. People don't care if you fail totally. We're all going to die someday. So get as many data points as you can. Have as much fun as you can and die well.
Amazing. It's one of the best answers you've ever had.
That's another fake smart moment.
But you know what? I like it and it resonated with me. Yeah. So we'll go with that. James, where can people learn more about you and Conjure?
I'm on Twitter at Welton. You can find Conjure at conjure.so.
James, that was genuinely a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Gary.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.